Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review dated June 14th, 2016. We'll begin this part of the readings with the obituaries. John D. Alleman, 56, died Friday, June 10th, 2016, due to injuries sustained in an airplane crash at the Williamson County Airport in Marion. A funeral mass will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, June 16th at St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Carbondale, with Robert Flannery officiating. A time of visitation for family and friends will be from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Thursday at the church. After services, in accordance with his wishes, he will be cremated. Private interment will be in Egyptian Memorial Gardens in Herron. The family requests memorial donations made to the Free Again Wildlife Refuge, Gumdrops, the Herron Animal Control Shelter, or to this able veteran. Charles Edward Dozier made his transition into eternal peace on June 8, 2016. Services will be held June 16th at Main Street Church, 2000 North Main Street, Decatur, at 11 a.m., with visitation an hour prior to service. Burial at Boiling Springs. Service entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. The family requests that in lieu of flowers, donations may be mailed to Ashley Johnson and Daphne Jorges, H-O-R-G-E-S, 1039 West Packard Street, Decatur, 62522. Debbie K. Freeman, 60, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 12:58 p.m. on Friday, June 10th, at Bayfront Health in St. Petersburg, Florida. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Friday, June 17th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, June 16th, at the funeral home, with Eastern Star rites Thursday evening. Burial will be in North Fork Cemetery, Decatur. The family requests casual attire. Memorials may be made to the charity of the donor's choice. Vera G. Gardner of Decatur died Friday, June 10th, 2016, in Fairhaven Christian Home. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 15th, at Harvest Christian Center. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Wednesday in the church. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park. Memorial contributions would be appreciated to Harvest Christian Center. Tanzias Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Patricia Pat L. Huddleston, 80, of Mattoon, passed away on June 11th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, June 15th, at the Barclay Funeral Chapel in Greenup, Illinois. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday evening at the funeral chapel. Burial will be in the Hayes Cemetery, rural Hidalgo, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Barbara Jean Haynes Lehman, 88, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, June 12th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A service to celebrate and honor her life will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, June 16th at Long Creek United Methodist Church with Pastor Tony Paulson officiating. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, June 15th at Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home. She will be laid to rest at Point Pleasant Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the Long Creek United Methodist Church. Billy M. McFerrin, Sr., 81, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, June 11th in Fairhaven's Christian Home. Funeral service to celebrate Billy's life will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, June 15th in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 5 to 7 Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Salem Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the South Wheatland Fire Protection District or Fairhaven's Christian Home in his memory. The family requests casual attire. Rita L. Euler, 81, of Decatur, died Sunday, June 12th at Imbodden Creek Living Center. Funeral services will be 2 p.m. Friday, June 17th at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, with visitation 1 hour prior to service time. Burial will be in Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta. Memorials may be made to St. Jude or American Heart Association. Roger Lynn Schaefer, 63, of Decatur, died Sunday, June 12th, in his home. Funeral services will be 12 p.m. Thursday, June 16th, at South Shores Christian Church, with visitation beginning at 10 o'clock until service time. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home is handling the arrangement. Martiel Mary Trulock, 97, of Polk City, Florida, passed away on June 6th in Lakeland, Florida. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 18th at Winter Haven Christian Church. We turn now to the opinions page. The political cartoon that is usually featured on this page is very simple today. It's merely an enlarged square or rectangular drawing of an American flag showing 50 black stars on a field of dark gray. And the headline on the cartoon is simply this: "We mourn 50 dead Americans in Orlando." The featured editorial by Decatur Herald staff today has to do with legislative maps, and the headline is "Maps Protect Legislators from Challenges." The Illinois General Assembly is the most ineffective legislative body in the United States, maybe the world. So logic would say that when 158 of the 177 positions are up for election, the competition to replace the current inhabitants would be intense. This is Illinois politics. Logic doesn't live here. After the recent deadline for candidates to file for a spot on the November ballot, we know now how the races are shaping up. It's not a pretty picture if you're a fan of representative government. Out of those 158 possible races for the General Assembly, 62 are contested races. Nearly 60% of the races in the General Assembly are walkovers. The candidates don't even have an opponent. in the House, 50 out of a possible 118 races are contested. In the Senate, 12 out of 40 are contested. About half of the contested races are located in Chicago and its suburbs. That means most Illinois residents won't have an opportunity to change the makeup of the General Assembly. There are a lot of reasons to vote in November, but for most Illinois residents, impacting state government won't be one of them. There is a tendency in politics to hate the institution but love the representative. While a lot of people are disgusted with the lack of progress in state government, fewer blame their local representative. Politicians are adept at blaming the institution rather than take personal responsibility. However, this lack of competitiveness is built into the system. This is a reason why Illinois needs to change the way its political maps is drawn. When politicians draw the maps, the result is what we currently have in Illinois, a gerrymandered system aimed more at protecting incumbents than representing citizens. The independent map amendment has garnered the signatures necessary to get placed on the November ballot. A court challenge orchestrated by a friend of House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat from Chicago, is the next hurdle for the amendment. The amendment is important because it would remove the map-making process from the politicians. The proposed system would result in fairer political maps and more competitive elections. That's why the Springfield politicians fear the independent map movement. Members of both parties are comfortable with the status quo, which keeps most of them drawing big legislative salaries with little worries about competitive elections. Many legislators will say they voted for redrawing the maps during the last session, which technically may be true, but that was a charade. The two houses considered different remapping resolutions, with no intention of the Senate and House working together on the required similar language. The budget impasse, the unfunded pension liability, the inability to properly and effectively fund education is a result of the current map drawing process. Illinois residents want a chance to change their dysfunctional government, but that won't happen until the map drawing process is changed. Today's issue includes an editorial written by, rather a column, written by Leonard Pitts of the Miami newspapers. And it's about a national issue. I'm going to read it today. It has this headline, Values That Threaten Women. This is a column about the value of six. Actually, it's about three individual sixes and their respective values. The first six came after a 23-year-old woman, her name has never been revealed, spoke in court to address the man who raped her last year, who took her out behind the dumpsters and penetrated her with his fingers after she had had too much to drink and passed out at a party. He might have gone further, except that he was spotted by two passersby who tackled him when he tried to run. Quote, "You don't know me," she told 20-year-old Brock Turner, a former student at Stanford University, an Olympic hopeful in swimming. "But you've been inside me, and that's why we're here today." She spoke of the rape and its aftermath, including the fact that that awful night a year and a half ago has left her sleeping with the lights on, quote, like a 5-year-old. In her statement, which you can and should read at BuzzFeed.com. The woman describes how it felt after a long and invasive rape exam to finally be alone with herself in the shower. Quote, I stood there examining my body beneath the stream of water and decided I don't want my body anymore. I was terrified of it. I didn't know what had been in it, if it had been contaminated, who had touched it. I wanted to take off my body like a jacket and leave it at the hospital with everything else. Turner's father, Dan, also offered a statement pleading for leniency for his son. Quote, his life will never be the one that he dreamed about and worked so hard to achieve. That is a steep price to pay for 20 minutes of action out of his 20 plus years of life. End quote. Turner was facing up to 14 years in prison. Judge Aaron Persky gave him the aforementioned 6 months. A harsher sentence, quote, would have a severe impact on him, explained the judge. Persky's compassion for the rapist and lack thereof for the victim has detonated social media like a bomb. People are furious. They are weeping. They are calling Turner a monster. At this writing, a petition at change.org demanding Persky's recall stands north of 900,000 signatures. Which brings us to the second six. The Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network says that one woman in every six has been the victim of an attempted or completed sexual assault. It's an awesome, awful number. Think about it in terms of women you know. Think about Bonnie, Khadija, Heather, Consuela, Sarah, and Kim. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Maybe she's never told you about it, so maybe you think it couldn't have happened, not to one of your six. But the numbers are what the numbers are. Mariam, Stephanie, Yumiko, Keisha, Lori, and Pam. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. It's not a big number. You were counting past it in kindergarten. For an American woman, it's a measure of the danger she faces from predatory men who consider her body to be their right. It is the difference between self-confidence and fear. For Turner's victim, it is a measure of the value the justice system placed on her trauma and on her. It is the difference between the free woman she was and the frightened one she has become. For Turner, it is the fraction of his life he's been ordered to pay for the arrogant violation of another person's self. It is the difference between spring and fall. And here's the final six, according to the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Only 6 in every 1,000 perpetrators of sexual assault end up in prison. If you are a woman or a man who cares about women, you ought to seethe, and then you ought to do whatever you can to fix a culture that makes possible a Brock Turner and an Aaron Persky. Because either way you look at it, the value of 6 is small. Too small for safety, too small for solace, and way too small for justice. We're going to read another column. This is also from a doctor. This is advice from Dr. Sally J. Foote, and she can be found at the Oak Hall Veterinary Clinic in Tuscola. She has written articles about puppy socialization and other topics for her Oka Vet Clinic website. The title is Body Language. Your dog will let you know when it's in a stressful situation. Preventing dog bites is not complex. When adults and children follow the rules for proper dog greetings, there are very few, if any, bites. The most important rule is to pay attention to what the dog's body is telling you. So part of bite prevention is learning the early signs of fear and removing your dog from the fearful situation. This is where people mess up, especially with family and friends' dogs. Approximately 77% of dog bites to children come from the family or known dog. Even children who have been taught to not hug a dog or bother a dog when sleeping do so anyway, resulting in bites. So the rules are ignored when it comes to a known dog, and the dog's response is also ignored, putting the dog in a situation where it may bite. Here is a common situation. An owner is walking a beautiful golden retriever by the playground and sees a friend and their kids playing there. This dog is nervous around loud noises, as shown by the pacing, panting, and ducking around the owner's legs. The owner talks to the friend, ignoring what the dog's body is saying. The kids know this dog and have petted it at home, and the dog seems to like petting in that setting. Now, three kids run up to the pretty dog that cannot move away. As the adults are continuing to talk, ignoring the dog and the kids, the dog's fear escalates, and it snaps at the child who hugs it. A child screams and cries. The dog cowers and shakes, and the kids run off. The shocked owner says, "What the heck happened?" The rules of petting. Stay away if a dog does not come near. Do not pet around the head or face. One person petting at a time. We're all ignored by the children and adults. This was not a fluke situation. The dog was telling everyone, "Get me out of here." But no one removed the dog or the kids. So the dog did what it had to do. It bit the child to make the child go away. If the owner was watching her dog and the kids as she talked to her friend, she would have stepped away with her dog and said, "Kids, leave him alone. He's getting overwhelmed here." Observing the scene, she would realize the park had noise that was making her dog nervous. It is not rude to share attention when you are out with your dog. If you have to stop talking to a friend to protect your dog, that is what you do as a responsible owner. Other people are not always going to follow the rules of greeting a dog right, and you have to take charge. The other common bite scene occurs when the owner thinks that the nervous, barking, lunging dog is okay because the animal has never bitten anyone. They stay in the situation with the nervous dog, keeping the canine stuck. They may even encourage kids or people to attempt to pet their staring, growling dog, thinking he won't bite, he just has to get used to you. When a dog is staring at another dog or person, they hold still, looking calm, but they are on the brink of lunge bite. One movement closer, a hand reach or step the approaching human takes is enough for the dog to lunge and bite. The owner here is ignoring the dog's body language. This dog needs to be removed from the situation, and the owner should tell the approaching person to stop. If the dogs in these scenarios were not ignored but were listened to, the bite rate would drop dramatically. Please watch your dog and respond to what your dog needs at all times when around people, most especially. For more information on dog body language and bite prevention, visit doggonesafe.com. I'm going to conclude this broadcast with a few items from the last laugh page of this month's AARP bulletin. Here's a riddle. What do you call a line of rabbits walking backwards? Answer, a receding hairline. Here is another one. There are two cows standing in a field. Cow one, are you worried about mad cow disease? Cow two, why would I? I'm a helicopter. Have to think about that one. What's the difference between a well-dressed bicyclist and a poorly dressed unicyclist? The answer, a tire. What goes around the world but stays in a corner? Answer, a postage stamp. Here's a little item called a beef with cops. Police face lots of danger, but not usually from flying stakes. That's what happened in Longview, Texas, where police pursued a man suspected of stealing meat from Walmart. The suspect hit 100 miles an hour. During the chase, a news report said beef started flying out of the windows and bouncing off a squad car. The man was arrested, and only the meat was damaged. And here's something they call cheers. Cheers to a California EMT who showed up to help a homeowner and stayed to mow the lawn. The 87-year-old Sacramento man was cutting his grass with an old-school lawnmower when he fainted from the exertion. When an EMT's arrived, the man was okay, so one of them picked up the mower and finished the job. The man has a riding mower, said his son, but prefers, quote, to get some exercise. Computer tech pioneer Steve Wozniak has this to say about technology. When we started Apple, we talked about how we wanted to make blind people as equal and capable as sighted people. And you'd have to say we succeeded when you look at all the people walking down the sidewalk, looking down at something in their hands, and totally oblivious to everything around them. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review, dated June 14, 2016. I very much look forward to reading with you again next week.